The True False podcast is made possible with the support of the University of Missouri and the Donald W. Reynolds Journalism Institute.
Welcome to the True False Film Festival.
It's illegal for me to yell fire in the Missouri theater. That is not covered by the First Amendment. But where do you draw the line when it comes to elections?
Welcome to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofelt. In this episode, I sat down with Kimberly Reed, director of the film Dark Money. This film was an official selection at the 2018 Sundance Film Festival. And here at True False, we screened it at the Missouri Theater this fall as part of our partnership with the Murray Center for Documentary Journalism. Dark Money airs on PBS on October 1st. The film takes a close look at how untraceable corporate interests have shaped American politics since the landmark Supreme Court case, Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission. The case fundamentally changed campaign finance. The film documents how Reed's home state of Montana is fighting back against anonymous money after a long history with outside special interests. Here's Kimberly Reed on the origin of dark money.
You know, I heard about the Citizens United decision that came down from the U.S. Supreme Court. And for those who don't remember, that basically said that corporations are people and money is speech. And of course, we have the First Amendment. You can't constrain speech. So you can't constrain the speech of corporations. In other words, you can't constrain the money that corporations are spending. And that gave us unlimited contributions to political campaigns, unlimited spending. And that just seemed like a really bad idea to me at first blush. But I also had a lot of questions about it. Because it involves the First Amendment, and as a documentary filmmaker and having been a journalist, it was really an interesting sort of philosophical question about how many angels could dance on that pinhead, right? Mm. About where you draw the lines about free speech. We're going to be in the Missouri Theater tonight. It's illegal for me to yell fire in the Missouri Theater. That is not covered by the First Amendment. But where do you draw the line when it comes to elections? So all sorts of questions, all sorts of kind of first impressions from it. I don't think I knew what to do, even though a lot of people were talking about it. A lot of people saw that sort of slippery slope of having too much money in politics. But it just seemed abstract. It seemed complex. And that's, you know, money is not the most cinematic thing. Mm. I mean, when something dramatic happens with money in politics, it's because somebody, you know, looked at a spreadsheet or sent an email, or it's really not the sexiest, most cinematic stuff. So
I don't know. All the President's Men is pretty sexy.
So that's exactly what happened, because in 2012, my home state of Montana had a case that was going to the U.S. Supreme Court that had the ability to overturn Citizens United, or at least test it really, really strenuously. And it was this aha moment. It was like, oh, you could make a movie about this whole Citizens United thing, about money in politics, the role that money plays, and you could wrap it around this guy, Steve Bullock, the Attorney General of Montana, who's going to the U.S. Supreme Court. I kind of originally thought of it like, you know, instead of Mr. Smith goes to Washington, it was Mr. Bullock goes to Washington, and we're just going to follow this trial, and that's going to animate all of these issues. And, of course, once I got into it a little bit, what happened is that case was summarily reversed by the U.S. Supreme Court, and Mr. Bullock went to Washington, but nothing really happened when he went there. And Citizens United,
right? His challenge to Citizens United was slapped down by the courts. They basically said, "Hey, we really meant what we said when
That's
we
right.
passed Citizens United."
Yeah, they kind of doubled down. And so then I was like, "Okay, well, what? Where's the film?" You know. Mm-hmm. But in the process of getting there, I'd realized that everybody was talking about unlimited money, nobody was really talking about anonymous money, about dark money. When you have super PACs, those super PACs have to disclose their donors. So, having unlimited money in politics is a problem, but at least you can tell where it's coming from. At least you can tell who's behind it. What was happening in Montana, which was in a lot of ways a canary in a coal mine for a lot of these campaign finance issues, we were already seeing the role that anonymous money was playing. And I could see that that was going to get developed. I was also from there, and I could see that the citizens were going to push back against it, that they were going to figure out a way to resist that. You are already seeing the kind of nascent efforts that were kind of bubbling up. And it just looked like the situation was ripe for some drama to really build. And then when I saw that the same group of lawyers that were behind Citizens United were literally opening up offices in Montana so that they could continue to attack Montana's relatively strong campaign finance laws, I was like, okay, we got something here, because they were opening shop in one state, and that state was Montana.
And it happened to be the state where you grew up.
It happened to be the state where I was growing up. Before. So, yeah, I saw trouble brewing. I knew that I had access. I knew I could either knew or could get to the most important people that I should be talking to. It's a place where people introduce themselves by saying, "Hi, I'm Kimberly Reed, and I'm a fourth generation Montanan." And
you are.
I'm a fourth generation Montana. So I knew that I wasn't going to be, the filmmaker from New York who was parachuting in and with a preconceived notions and just say, put people in a box and tell them what to tell me.
Coming up after the break, director Kimberly Reed talks about the intersection of documentary and journalism.
Documentary filmmakers are in a position to tell the whole truth, to tell a much larger, much more contextualized truth than you can by doing those hitting the Daily Beast, right? We need both.
First, a word from our sponsor. This episode of the True False podcast is brought to you by the Donald W. Reynolds Journalism Institute. Here to tell us more is current RJI fellow Chris Guest. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So what's your elevator pitch for your project?
Sure. If you're a small and medium-sized news organization, if you're a local paper, a radio station, getting on board with modern mobile news app systems is expensive and probably not really an option for you. So this is something that lets you basically take a pre-made system, modify it to your needs. In a couple days, you can have a completely native iOS and Android apps for all your readers.
Oh, yeah. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot cheaper than the $50,000 that it usually costs.
So. Yeah, and this would be free, open source.
Completely free. Anybody can take it. Anybody can download it. We change a couple config files. You might have to hire a developer for like 2 or 3 days. That's what RJ is letting me work on.
Chris, again, he is a current Reynolds Journalism Institute fellow. We're really excited that you are sponsoring our podcast, taking a long look at the work of filmmakers, not unlike journalists who get to settle in with their work here at the RJA Fellowships. And the True False podcast is, of course, as I just said, sponsored by the Reynolds Journalism Institute. You can find out more at rjionline.org. That's rjionline.org. Welcome back to the True False podcast, presented by KVIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. Let's get back into our conversation with Kimberly Reed. Her film, Dark Money, is about America's complicated web of campaign finance. The film follows journalist John Adams, who investigates the money behind Montana's state politics. I asked Reed about how documentaries differ from long-form journalism. Here's Kimberly Reed.
I think, it really started to hit me after to see the role that documentary film played after the Iraq War started. And documentary filmmakers really stepped in and told stories that the press was not telling, either because they were kind of beholden or enrolled, or I want to say sequester, but that's not what the embedded was the phrase that everybody used, embedded with the troops. And I think you could really see this deviation where documentary filmmakers started telling, I think, a much larger truth. You know, that phrase, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I think that that documentary filmmakers are in a position to tell the whole truth, to tell a much larger, much more contextualized truth than you can by doing those, hitting the Daily Beast, right? We need both. In fact, our film, I think, is really a celebration of how much we need really good reporters at a local level who are in the state house, who are going to the school board meetings that nobody else wants to go to because that's where the rubber meets the road. And that's why we need those reporters who are telling those stories. And I think in many ways what our film does from its, like, maybe this larger truth is tell the story of John Adams as he is endeavoring against all odds to keep staying in a position where he can keep telling that truth, where he can still keep showing up at the school board meeting, as it were.
Yeah. I want to hear from you about your relationship between journalism and long-form documentary filmmaking. And I'm curious about what, if your approach when you go up to these people, these citizen legislatures, does that feel like a different approach when you're a filmmaker versus like your experience being a journalist?
I'm going to jump forward a little bit and answer your question, then we'll rewind again. But because eventually I ended up connected with an investigative reporter, and I did so because I had really seen how effective it is in All the President's Men and any other kind of story that, you know, Spotlight was coming out and for part of it. And it's a really intriguing and time-tested and proven formula to just have these investigative reporters digging into something. And especially when you're making a film about money and politics and about those spreadsheets, right? About email leaks that you weren't around to discover when they got leaked, right? You just didn't happen to be there with a camera when somebody sent a trove of emails to the investigative reporter. You know, you have to find a way to dramatize that story. And by seeing it through the eyes of an investigative reporter, that's a very effective, mysterious, compelling narrative structure. What I would say is that doing that with John S. Adams, which is the name of the investigative reporter that I ended up kind of pairing up with, and doing it on my own felt like it was the same effort. Like, in other words, I could either talk to these folks myself and question them myself. And as I was digging into this big, huge topic, you know, it was either me having a conversation with somebody on the other side of the camera, or eventually, once I connected with John, it was very effective to have him be the one asking those questions, because we were digging at the same thing. We were going for the same, we were following the same mystery. We were pulling on the same threads. And so, yeah, it really felt like the same effort at the end of the day.
Well, there are a significant number of characters, so to speak, in this story. I mean, different characters sort of, or people, rear their heads at a lot of different points. So there is a ton of information that you have to convey and keep in your mind and keep in the audience's mind. So I could see why they would think it was
that's complex. And that's always the hard part, is like, you know, exposition. You know, how do you deliver that in a way that gives viewers what they need to understand the story, but then really let the drama take over. And, you know, I think we're all pretty sensitive to when a filmmaker, when a storyteller is giving us that exposition background material that you will be tested on later, you know, so you sort of feel like that as an audience member, and doing that in an elegant way that feels like you're not really being lectured at, or, you know, you need to start taking notes, is one of the big challenges. And with campaign finance, there's a lot of exposition that you got to get out there.
Yeah. And I think I do, just to circle back around to the question about your relationship with journalism, and part of why I'm interested in this is because, you know, we're presenting the film A True False in conjunction with the Murray Center for Documentary Journalism. And, you know, to me, when I think about the function and the language of a documentary, I don't have the same expectation of objectivity that I might in something that's investigative and long form. And I think that for me, there are still strands of journalism that are striving, right, to be objective. And when I think of documentary, I don't hold that same expectation. So I'm curious, what are your sort of ethics in thinking about approaching this film? Do you have that feeling of like that journalistic standard? Or how do you approach it?
Yeah, it was really interesting to have those discussions with John Adams as we were doing it, because John is very much, he comes from, he's an investigative reporter, and he did try to do as much as he could these longer form investigative journalistic reports where he was really digging at something and it took a while to find it. But he was also involved in, the Daily Beast, as they call it, in cranking out copy every day and stories that were just like just the facts, right? Mm-hmm. Just fact. And to that, I would say that if you're making a documentary film and if you're making one like Dark Money that took 6 years to make, if you had a film that was just the facts, ma'am, it would be the most boring film that you have had ever seen, because what's happening as over those 6 years, as you're pulling on those threads, is you're learning, and you're learning that this fact leads to that fact, and it's much more fortuitous and revealing and eventually leading you in the right direction to pull on this thread instead of on that thread over there. Just by virtue of that, you are self-selecting this course for the film to take.
You're listening to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. I'm talking to director Kimberly Reed about her film Dark Money. I asked Reed about the limits of free speech and how that differs between public speech and campaign finance.
You know, the way I always think about that is that the counter argument that you hear, what you hear in our film, I thought was very important to unspool it. The counter argument you hear to the idea that we should know where money is coming from is that violates the free speech rights of people because it is compelled speech.
It makes them tell you who they are.
It makes them tell you who they are. The first place I usually want to go with that is to say that, like, look, the First Amendment was created 200 years ago. It was a little bit before Twitter. And it was designed for people in the town square, you know, who had something to say about the king, could stand up in the town square and say something about the king and not be tossed in prison. The idea was that, let's even say that you got a printing press that was really hard to come by, and you were to print a bunch of pamphlets and scatter them all over the village, that maybe that would be, the most profligate speech that you could get. The point is that speech was hard to come by, and the hard thing about, perpetuating speech at that time was that most of the audience was not going to hear that. I'm not going to, be able to tell everybody in Missouri or in Montana what's going on at a moment's notice by just hitting enter on a keyboard like you can now. Now, I think the challenge is that there's this preponderance of speech, and the hard part isn't speaking. The hard part isn't getting that printing press or finding the soapbox that you can stand on in the middle of the town square, right? The hard part is not speaking. The hard part is landing that audience. So
yeah, it's like harder. The hard part is listening.
Right, right.
Getting the listeners, yeah.
Which is why this, the way that Citizens United gets couched is that money is speech. doesn't make sense to a lot of people, because everybody, their just gut reaction to that is like, well, maybe you could construe it that way, but it's just not fair for Sheldon Adelson or Tom Steyer, for that matter, to have so much more speech than I do. It's just they can drown out my speech. And there's this inequality, there's fundamental unfairness in that, in the way that that speech is construed. So that's not fair.
Yeah.
And so that's one way to sort of unpack that argument. But the other way, when we're talking about that crowded firehouse, is that people will say, you'll hear the argument, you hear it in our film, is that, you know, the more speech, the better, the more money is spent, the better, because more people are talking about this in our democracy, and we'll just assume that nobody drowns anybody else out. But like, that's the idea.
Cacophonous democracy.
Mm-hmm. And then you'll hear people say that, like, you know, people spend less on elections than they do on chewing gum every year or on Halloween or whatever. And my answer to that is, like, guys, we're talking about one day every 2 years or 4 years or 6 years. That's a really important day. We decide on those days, on those election days, who we're going to hand enormous power over to. And we need to be sure that we're not going to hand it over to corrupt officials. We're not going to hand it over to donors who have had a corrupt influence on people who are running for office or people who are already in office. And that decision of how and how that money is spent and where it's coming from is the most important decision that we make in our democracy. And that the comparison to, you know, bubblegum is just I think it's really insulting, actually.
Yeah. One of the things that I have been thinking about in the last few days is that it's really not, the idea of dark money isn't really that confusing. I mean, there was a landmark legislation case in 2010, Citizens United, and then it made it okay for corporations to give unlimited amounts of money and for us as citizens to not know who was giving that money. Mm-hmm. And that's just And then I think so much of the other stuff is like, okay, now what happens?
I was actually doing another live podcast, and it was at a place where they had different studio audiences because it was in front of a live studio audience. And there was a bit of a mix-up, and we were in the wrong room, and the other group showed up, and it turned out to be a like the Boys and Girls Club of San Leandro. So all of a sudden I'm talking about pretty technical campaign finance stuff and Supreme Court decisions with a bunch of seventh graders. I mean, it actually ranged in age from like 6 to probably 18. And I found that they just totally get everything they need to understand about this with what you said of just like, you know, you're keeping secrets. And the other thing, which is what really drove the whole story in Montana, is just a fundamental sense of unfairness. It's like, you guys, these are the rules. And we all agreed to play by the rules, and you're breaking the rules, and that's not fair.
That's all for this special episode of the True False podcast. We'll be back this winter with more new episodes. And until then, you can find our conversations with filmmakers at kbia.org, on iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, leave us a review. It'll help more people find this show. Thank you to Kimberly Reed for joining me. This episode was produced by Sam Mosher and edited by Janet Saidi and Aviva Okeson-Haberman. The song you heard was Marissa Anderson's Into the Light. Our introduction was created by Tim Pilcher, using sounds from the True False Film Fest. Join us this winter with more episodes about the art and craft of nonfiction storytelling. And I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you that passes are now on sale for True False 2019. I'm Allison Kofeld. Thanks for listening.